Yeah, well, marketers ruin everything, right? We hear that all the time. So that's just expected.
In this episode of the Social Currency Podcast, we interview Facebook queen Mari Smith. Mari is one of the world's leading social media thought leaders, consulting, speaking, and offering online training to countless digital marketers, just like us. Fast Company even described Mari as a veritable engine of personal branding, a relationship marketing whiz, and the Pied Piper of the online world. Forbes named Mari as one of the top 10 social media influencers 3 years in a row. All right. Here we go with the queen of Facebook, Mari Smith.
Hello, hello. Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Hello, Mari. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you.
So let's dig in with your background and kind of how that perhaps led you to focus your area of expertise specifically on Facebook.
Sure thing. So throughout my entire career, as I was all my young adult life working in Scotland, where my family's originally from. And I just always had these two parallel loves, my love of relationships and technology, people and the internet. And so I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. I was an employee most of my life until 32. And then I came over to San Diego, just got invited out of the blue, and I had been putting together all these plans for launching my own business, so speaking, personal development, and presentation skills. And this invitation just came in from a long-lost friend who'd moved to San Diego, and it was like a defining moment. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm supposed to start my business in San Diego. And so over I came and was flat broke at the time, didn't hardly know anybody. I did a couple of suitcases, 50 pounds to my name, and basically got launched. I was so fortunate. I just really worked hard and met people and got networked and bartered my immigration attorney's fees for building my website. And really got launched doing e-commerce consulting and information, product creation, internet marketing. And then it was in 2007 that Facebook kind of landed in my lap. And it was just another defining moment in my life. I just fell in love with it. I could just sense the energetic feel of this site back in 07. I thought, oh my gosh, there's something profound here. And it was this perfect marriage of my two loves, my relationship and tech, you know, people and the internet. So just my enthusiasm and passion has never really wavered since then. It's been tested a few times, but I just really have a great commitment and passion about Facebook.
That's so good to hear. I mean, especially just starting from scratch, right? And knowing and following your heart and just getting out here and then it just taking off. I mean, such a reward for that commitment to yourself.
Thank you, Tuck. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly how it felt. It was meant to be. And yeah, I think you can actually change your whole destiny by changing your name and or your location. So I actually did both. I have an extra I in my name. It's the Gaelic, Scottish Gaelic spelling, but nobody could pronounce it in the States. So I just spell M-A-R-I. Changed my destiny.
Yeah, we're not very fancy here. I know.
That's awesome.
That's great. Facebook is a hot topic these days. And I think you picked a very interesting focal point, you know, especially with the conversations that have happened, especially in the last year and a half around Facebook. A lot of people say Facebook is dying, that no one's using it. Is anyone under 30 using it? Give us a rundown of Facebook from your perspective and where they're at right now.
Certainly. And it's interesting that in the last couple of years or so, certainly the last probably 12 to 18 months, with Facebook's earnings calls, they decided to lump all the numbers together in terms of users. So we know it's just under 2.4 billion combined active users across their family of apps, Facebook, Instagram, Messenger, WhatsApp. And so there really is no other company or family of apps that has reached that magnitude, that number of global users. And Facebook, you know, they certainly will be talking about this, I'm sure, a little bit with some of the challenges they've faced in the last few years. And yet they still seem to be earning. Their earnings are just extraordinary. But in terms of users, really interesting because, yeah, you've got the Gen Zs under 20, whatever it is, 13 to 20, 21. They will definitely be more active on Snapchat and certainly TikTok and whatever other app comes along that's more appealing to the really that youngest demographic. And I know that Zuckerberg has really tried so hard to woo them, right, by copying the stories feature on Instagram and really pushing it hard on Facebook and, you know, attempting to buy Snapchat a number of times and back in the day, but that's obviously not going to happen in today's world. But I just do not believe any of the naysayers that say, oh my God, nobody's using Facebook. It's dying. It's dropping off. It's the younger people are no longer using it. I just think that's factual at all, not my experience and with the organizations that I work with. What is certainly true, Tuck and Jess, is that it definitely is more difficult over the past several years for companies to achieve organic reach, to really get their content, their message in front of the right exact audience for free. So you do need to put a little more time and effort into it. You do need to be placing ads and have an ad budget. Fortunately, I think this is actually a good thing. It's getting less about vanity metrics, or as Sheryl Sandberg calls them, proxy metrics, about measuring your likes and even your engagement numbers, right? You want to have engagement. Engagement is the first kind of part of it after content. But ultimately, what you want is leads and sales and conversions, and, you know, along with that, a highly engaged community, which could be private or public. You might have a really engaged Facebook group. But I'm very excited about a lot of the different parts. I'm sure we'll be talking about them as this interview progresses. But there's aspects of Facebook that I just never really been fully tapped into yet. For example, Messenger. So that was a big part of Facebook's F8 conference, the developer conference back in late April, early May. It was actually featured right after Zuck's opening keynote, where they featured Messenger. And one of the things they said they're doing is creating a social network built around messaging. So honestly, I think marketers and businesses, we can't even conceive at this moment in time, like a year from now, 2-3 years, what Messenger might look like in terms of a business tool.
Yeah, and that's a great segue. You know, to your point at F8, you know, he walked out and said the future is private. Mm-hmm. And obviously they own WhatsApp, as you mentioned already. And so, and we're even just over the last couple months, we're seeing Facebook private groups, I feel, really raise up in the navigation and sort of prominence. So I'm just curious if you can speak a little bit more about this notion of the future being private, or perhaps what the notion of whether it's Facebook Messenger or WhatsApp, but that messaging kind of one-to-one or one-to-few might mean for businesses who are listening.
Absolutely. So I have a few thoughts on that. First of all, I think if we kind of almost like read between the lines of why did Zuckerberg do the sudden pivot to privacy? Why did he pen this 3,200 word privacy manifesto back like in March, which kind of seemed to come out of the blue, even to, you know, experts like myself are like, whoa, where'd this come from? But it was really in response to all of this government pressure, and they knew the FTC fine would be impending and new privacy laws would be impending. And so, you know, back in January this year, they announced that they'd first of all do this interoperability between Messenger, WhatsApp, and Instagram Direct. This is not going to even really be, you know, maybe another year, 2020 or more, before we really start to see what that looked like. But the pivot to privacy, or the future is privacy, is in a way is Facebook saying, look, if we make everything encrypted, then people will be more likely to feel comfortable and safe and trust, you know, the reputation will go up and the trust score will go up. So in addition, I tend to put the stories format, the ephemeral disappearing 24-hour messaging, into a similar context of private messaging, because Mark Zuckerberg has said numerous times that people will share more and more comfortably when they know their content won't, quote unquote, stick around forever. So that's where we can kind of almost put our, you know, feet in the shoes of Zuckerberg and team, the management team, and go, okay, how can we get the users to share more and to share more comfortably and confidently? Oh, I know, let's just make it all private and let's make it encrypted. Now, encrypted means that even they supposedly not been able to read it. But I do feel that there's aspects of, for example, WeChat. For many, many years, China's WeChat has kind of been the envy of the Western world. And WhatsApp is the number one messaging app outside the U.S. Messenger is the number one inside the U.S., you know, alongside Apple's, what do you call it?
iMessage.
I'm a longtime Apple user. I should know it. So iMessage is also, we have to keep that in mind, is a big competitor to Messenger, certainly in the US. But there's really something magical when it comes to business application of getting into private dialogue with your customers and your prospects. And this is where I feel like a really major growing area will be Messenger automation with the introduction of chatbots, AI, just the concept of being able to even partially automate some of your pre and post sales customer care and lead generation, answering FAQs. And I think, you know, it's funny, in some of my keynotes this past 12 to 18 months, I'll put up a slide that just has the giant Messenger logo. And then I hit my clicker and it comes up saying marketers may ruin Messenger. And the reason they might ruin it is, and I've seen this already, I'll sign up and I'll subscribe to a chatbot and I'll just get bombarded with all this, you know, they're not supposed to do that. They're not supposed to blast you with marketing messages. You have to get permission to do these subscriber broadcasts with zero promotional content. And I feel that the most creative businesses and brands out there will win the private messaging, including private marketing, even if you will, they'll win that game if they can get more human with their bots, if they can get more creative, more fun, more even almost entertaining, where people will get excited to go and interact with your chat bot, you know. So, and there's great companies out there. I'm actually going to be keynoting at the ManyChat conference, and ManyChat's one of the leaders in that area. And just one more thing on this conversation is, back in June, I was chairing a 3-day customer service summit right here in San Diego. And they had major brands from all over, like all the airlines, a lot of financial industries. They had people from representatives from Twitter, Google, Facebook. Converse Social is one of the leaders in this area. And it was so fascinating and exciting to me to see this, the future. Like, you get a glimpse into the future of chatbot and messenger automation, or just automation in general, in terms of customer service, and where to draw that line between bot and human, and to really train the AI to be intelligent and responsive. And so, you know, if you're interacting with it and it's whether it's voice activated or text, you're booking a table or something, and it's saying, you know, how many people, and you think the bot's going to expect you to say for two people. But if you say, oh, you know, my husband and I, the bot knows, well, that's two people. So it's like the more intelligently these bots can be programmed, the higher their use case.
Yeah, so you really see artificial intelligence and messaging platforms going hand in glove.
I really do, yeah. And one of the speakers at that customer service summit was from interactions.com, and they have like this intelligent AI, which is this intelligent virtual assistant, they call it. It's like it has this incredible voice or text, and they're the ones that I got that example from, where they're saying, if you say, what's my husband and I, and the bot just knows, okay, that's two people, because it's like the more, it's like back in the day, you know, the acronym GIGO, right? Garbage in, garbage out. So it's like the good in, good out. The more, the better you can program these intelligence, these AI, these bots, the more it can serve you.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, well, marketers ruin everything, right? We hear that all the time. So that's just expected. That's just expected. And by the way, hey, thanks, Mark Zuckerberg, for giving us maybe a year to put all those plans into place to completely ruin it when it comes out, right? So so we've been chatting about Facebook, and you know, I think you did a great job of kind of bringing the fact that we know here, but not a lot of people know, Mari, that Facebook also owns Instagram and WhatsApp, which are big components. And especially as you move down the age bracket, Instagram probably even more of a priority for, you know, as you get younger than Facebook itself. So on Instagram, there's this testing that's happening, not necessarily in the US, but we're seeing it globally, where they're starting to take likes off posts. actually saw an article yesterday that one of the influencers in one of these countries had a mental breakdown when she realized that the likes were gone from her posts and completely lost it on an Instagram story that was live broadcast and said she needed to take a break. And I think Instagram's premise is that maybe there's a little bit too much of this happening. So maybe it's a little bit of mental health and some preservation of that. And then also this cottage industry of you know, influencer marketing has literally lived and died on the likes and engagement on a platform. What's your thought on Instagram hiding likes, and what do you think it's foreshadowing?
Okay. So it's terrific, terrific topic. And again, it's a little bit like this pivot to privacy where we take a couple of different perspectives. You look, okay, what is the reason they're telling the public that they want us to believe? And then what could possibly be the real reason behind the scenes that's going to be somehow related to profit? And so on the one hand, we can go, okay, yeah, I totally agree with you here, Tuck, that it could very well be a mental health play because there are literally that younger demographic, it could be, you know, in their teens, early 20s, they literally will experience physical pain if they do not have the kind of expectations met around how many likes they're going to have. So that's one thing we could, oh my gosh, you know, Instagram is being so conscious and they're really helping to make sure it's not about vanity and external reinforcement. And that's one thing. On the other hand, a possibly more likely reason is that there is an inordinate amount of influencer marketing that's happening on Instagram and a lot of money changing hands that is absolutely between the user and their sponsors and has nothing to do with Instagram or Facebook. Having said that, Facebook has the branded content tag, which they have on both Facebook and Instagram now. So to be compliant, you know, if you're getting paid for a post, you tag your sponsor and everybody's happy, supposedly, right? And, you know, Facebook and Instagram don't take any payment from any commissions or anything. But I do feel, and I have been reading quite a bit on this topic, and I do sense that there's more to it than we're seeing at the moment. It does seem that it's maybe there's more of a play towards how can these influencers and up and coming established influencers, like at the celebrity level, all the way to all the names that they have from the micro, the macro, the nano influencers, to really focus more on genuine, authentic followers, real engagement, real results that influencer is tracking themselves, that they can still have that evidence and showcase to potential brands and sponsors, as opposed to being public facing where it's wide open for gaming. And that, you know, it's just been rife in terms of being able to buy your likes and buy your engagement. And I think that some companies have been really hurt. I think some, you know, maybe uninformed brands, are they paying some good money and they end up not getting the results they want. So it's kind of a mixed bag conversation right now. And I do feel that it's very much in its experimental phase. So it's about 6 or 7 countries, and Canada is one of them. Australia, they just rolled out. I posted on my page about it the other week, and it was really fascinating to see the variety of comments and pros and cons, and you know, those are freaking out about it, and those who are real savvy marketers and go, no, this is a good thing. This is really a good thing. As I just said about, you know, focusing on the deeper relationships and the real results. So, but you're right, Tuck, in terms of being a younger demographic, all marketers really would do well to embrace Instagram more, and especially on the stories format. I mean, there's 500 million daily active users, right, on both Instagram and the same number on Facebook, plus Messenger, they lump them together. In terms of just that, having that massive captive audience, I like to think of stories, the stories format, as being top of feed and top of mind awareness. And whether a brand or business wants to start getting involved in organic stories, that's okay. Maybe you don't do much in the organic stories, but you definitely should be doing stories ads and native stories ads, not necessarily just doing automatic placements. So, you know, Facebook will just format it for you, know, show up as an ad. That's fine. You can do that. But the brands that are really going the extra mile and creating those 9x16 photos or videos are even better. It just stands out more. It looks more native.
Yeah, it's a great tip.
Yeah.
Great tip.
Yeah. And I agree. I feel like the organic reach, one of the last few places we can still get it as a brand, is on Instagram. And then even a double click into that is in stories within Instagram. So kind of continuing on that same topic of different formats, of how content looks and feels on Facebook or Instagram, in particular, thinking a little bit about going live. And I know you do this, and many thought leaders feel comfortable more and more so going live. And so one of the topics that we discussed actually in episode 37 of the Social Currency Podcast was actually about 5G and some of these major technology shifts like 5G that will begin to impact marketing. And how will they impact marketing? Well, one of the ways is obviously higher speeds, right? Higher connectivity speeds and lower latency or delay. Mm-hmm. So things like video and live video in particular, all of a sudden becomes even more accessible and even smoother to watch as a viewer. So I'm just curious what your thoughts are about, are we going to see an increase in people going live, or is it still just a minority? Kind of where the trend is around going live?
Yeah, I love this question. So I think that most people, when they're going to go live or thinking about going live, whether on Instagram or Facebook, they're not necessarily thinking about the speed. They should be. They absolutely should be, because the higher quality, the better. And, you know, you can stream live on YouTube in 4K, I'm pretty sure, right? 4K. And I think it was Facebook, it's 720. Many, many, many accounts have the ability to stream in 1080, especially if you have access to more like the gamer community. And eventually Facebook will support 4K streaming as well. And so, yeah. And then also it was some time ago that Facebook launched their like set-top app so that you can, you know, stream on your big television. So for certain, you would want to have decent resolution. So going forward, I see that marketers, businesses, brands would absolutely do well to embrace live and high quality live, like literally television quality. That's what's standing out in the feed and in Facebook Watch. If we look at their most successful show, is Red Table Talk, Jada Pinkett Smith and her mother and her daughter. It's got three generations on there, pre-produced, not live, it's pre-produced, and it's basically like a television quality, high professional produced show, and one of their most successful. But in terms of live, you saw all kinds of news stations who, you know, that's what they do. They stream live on the television. Now they just switch mediums and do some streaming live through Facebook. And which I think is great. I just feel like there needs to be a breakaway from almost what I feel is like a plateau since Facebook in particular launched their live 4 years ago now, which was August 2015. And where most of us as business people, as marketers, we just don't have time to consume all that much content. So it really has to stand out, especially if you're B2B. And you know, so having a good lighting, good audio, good lighting, good background, being very structured with your content, being succinct and not having all kinds of preamble in the beginning, right? So it's like you got to grab that attention within the first 3 seconds. But the good news is that Facebook has brought out a couple of different components or features that allow you to mock up a live experience. One is a premiere, so you premiere a video and you can schedule that. And the other is what's called a new release. So it kind of gathers the audience and you just go ahead and upload a video they've already pre-produced, and it could be 3 minutes or whatever length you want. And off you go. And then the other component is watch parties. And as a marketer, I must say, I really wish that watch parties were a much more prevalent feature on Facebook, because I could see all kinds of marketers gathering, you know, ambassadors or joint venture partners, affiliates, or just fans, just to be able to host these video viewing parties on their profile or their group or their page, and basically getting free visibility with your video content.
Yeah, it feels like often Facebook, not surprisingly so, will turn the volume up on reach for formats that they especially want to emphasize. So when video first came onto the platform way back, right, we saw that happen. And I feel like that's kind of where stories and live are. They're turning the volume up to get more people to use those tools.
You're right, Jess. Absolutely. Yeah. Zuckerberg himself has said that live gets 6 times the engagement than regular video.
Yeah. And that, I think that also is, there's a human factor there too. I mean, even if Facebook wasn't, you know, kind of juicing it, if you will, I don't know about you, but I definitely, I'm drawn into live, right? Because you know that something can go wrong or it might not be perfectly produced. And it's inherently a little bit more interesting to see what what transcends, what results from a live broadcast versus something that's been pre-produced and scripted.
You're right. You're right. There is that almost like that element of surprise and the element of like, oh my gosh, anything could happen right now and I'm going to witness it real time.
Right. Totally.
All right. So, Mari, I want to jump back to something we were talking about a little bit ago. And you called it out, organic versus paid, especially on Facebook, and Instagram. Mm. Let's talk about the ad side. So you run a small company of about 10 or so. How do you personally use Facebook ads to generate leads or nurture existing clients?
Okay. So I do some ads for my own benefit, direct, you know, with when I'm offering programs or courses, you know, an online initiative. And one of my favorite ways to use the ads platform is I actually work with a lot of partners. So I do quite a bit of influencer marketing, which is one of my favorite areas of business. And so I work with a number of different brands and businesses, and I usually start with a Facebook Live. I start with a signature piece of content, educational, try to make it as low pitching and salesy as possible. Just awareness, really to raise awareness about a certain product or service. And one example would be HubSpot. I recently teamed up with HubSpot, and they were offering, they have a platform for free, their HubSpot marketing free platform. You can use a CRM, and they also do these Facebook lead ads. So I wanted to make my audience aware of that, this free educational live. And then what I negotiate with my contracts with influencer marketing, brand ambassador work is an ad budget. And so I manage that. My team and I manage that. We do custom audiences. We do re-engagement. So I'll go ahead and wait maybe 24 or 48 hours to get as much organic reach as I can on that Facebook Live. Then we'll go ahead into Ads Manager, and we'll promote that to a wider audience of the exact specific target audience that my clients or my ambassador clients are looking for. And then, because if that's like 30 minutes, then we'll go ahead and download that and we'll take a cut. We'll do maybe a 60-second cut of just the highlights, like a highlight reel. And we'll turn that into an ad, and we'll do some retargeting. We'll drive them to a landing page. We've got to have the pixel in place, of course. So it's really a whole campaign. And I think this is the mistake that some businesses and brands are making, is that they just, you know, hit that all-pervasive boost button and they're not really thinking it through of like, okay, what are we trying to accomplish here? Or another mistake would be just kind of going one and done and not having it part of a sequence, just not having a strong call to action, not using all that Facebook offers with custom audiences, lookalike audiences, and in the pixel. So, but I find it extremely effective right now. They've just changed, Facebook just changed and just rolling out this the video views objective. They're calling it through play, THRU play, which is their way of saying it's going to be 15 seconds of the video or more. If you have a 1 minute video, then they're going to show this video to people who have a history of watching longer videos and longer. Yeah, it's 1 minute, but 15 seconds or more. Or if it's only a 10 second video, then they'll watch all of it. And so I've actually found it extremely, extremely helpful. And it's to your point earlier, Jess, about where Facebook will kind of like turn the dial up on certain both paid and organic. I've seen features or products they want us to use more. So right now I'm finding through play video views is actually really quite affordable. If you can get that down to, you know, a penny a view or 5 or 10 cents a view, and then doing some retargeting with an engaged audience. That's one more mistake I was going to mention, is that businesses that try to go straight for the sale to a cold audience is one of my pet peeves, because I study ads that I'm showing all the time and I'm thinking, how do you expect me to sign up for this thing? I don't know the first thing about you. I've never heard about you. This shows up in my feed.
Mara, I think I saw you speak at the Inbound conference last year, which is actually HubSpot's conference. And you did a great real-time lead acquisition through the chatbot that you had. And so, you know, you had a slide up and said, hey, if you want to get this freebie, you know, jump into the chatbot and chat with you. And it seemed very natural. It seemed very real, conversational. And so I thought that was a really excellent execution of, you know, exactly what you're speaking to here in terms of that methodology and thinking about the sequence as much as that single moment.
Yeah. And that's an area going forward I'm very excited about, as we've talked about quite a bit, is this messenger automation, but with that blend of, so you could do that during a Facebook Live, and maybe you have like a free white paper, an ebook or a guide or something you're giving away, and you can have your viewers comment was a specific keyword or key phrase, or you could set it up through ManyChat or MobileMonkey, or there's all kinds of different chatbot companies out there. Maybe you're going to build your own, but that it's getting triggered on a certain keyword or even just on any comment. And we're only seeing the very beginning of it, like I say, of how you can utilize this tool as an initial lead generation, but then a lead nurturing sequence. And then also using that in ads, it's called a click to messenger ad, right? So wherever they see the ad, they tap it and now they're in a messenger dialogue with you, and you can have the chatbot begin that dialogue.
That's cool. Yeah. And I think it is such a, it feels very common sense, but such a wise approach that you laid out where, you know, you're using the different aspects of social media in a sort of a portfolio approach. So you talked about going live and then allowing that to kind of build awareness, and then perhaps doing something organically that's maybe a cut down, letting that have a day or two, and then perhaps taking the paid media approach and again using retargeting to hit folks that have already kind of raised their hand or shown some interest. The word nurture is such a perfect word for it, because if it is actually relationship marketing, if you think about how we build real relationships outside of the digital world, it's never a one and done. It takes time and repetition. So I love that you you have a kind of a structured approach to that.
Very much so, Jess, very much so. And you know, another aspect of that Facebook Live and being comfortable on camera is that I've said this for years, that there's no amount of sophisticated technology that will ever take the place of real in-person connecting. I love going to events and speaking at events and meeting people in person, but the next best thing is video, and especially live video, because to your point earlier, where anything could happen, but you can also interact in real time. And there's software, a variety of different software out there. I use one called Ecamm for Macs, or there's BeLive TV. There's all kinds of software you can use as opposed to, you know, Facebook's own native one, and allow you to put comments up on screen. And people love to see that. It just feels even more intimate and more connected, where, oh my gosh, yeah, my name's on the screen.
So you're totally
interacting in real time.
And especially if you verbally call them out as well, which I've seen you do, I think people that like moment of sort of fame, it feels, it's powerful.
Yeah.
Okay. So I want to transition a little bit. I know we've gone pretty deep on Facebook and even touched on Instagram a little bit. But I'd love to get your perspective on, you mentioned WeChat just briefly, but thinking about China and who might be sort of chomping at the heels of Facebook. And I know you've spoken a bit, and we've talked a little bit on Social Currency about ByteDance, or TikTok, as it's often referred to here in the US. Tell us more about that.
Yeah. So ByteDance is a company out of China. And as much as a Facebook marketing expert, top leading expert for going on 13 years now, I've often said if ever Facebook came under great threat, real threat of a major competitor, that my prediction would be that company would come out of China. And so, WeChat, they're used in other parts of the world, but they're very much internal. It's an internal app for China, all of China. But TikTok, ByteDance had the great fortitude or foresight to acquire Musical.ly. And Musical.ly was like that karaoke app, definitely aimed at that real young, tween generation. And it's fun and it's goofy, it's short-term video. Jimmy Fallon kind of put it on the map in this country too, where he's like had all these silly TikTok challenges. But it's incredible given that it's like the top most downloaded app. It's been in the top 10 for the last, year or so, and then really at the top of the list in the most recent while. And so I do feel that us marketers need to keep a strong eye on what is happening with TikTok. Why are people loving it? Even if you don't have any intention of using it, like get an account, poke around with it, play around with it, see what is the experience like? Because it could, an app like TikTok, actually TikTok or similar, could eventually become a real threat to Facebook and or Instagram, because just because of obviously it's the younger generation always, right, in the coming decades that they're always going to have to cater to and keep people's interest. And it's hard to shake off a perception, if you will. Like I meet people all the time that'll be, oh my God, like, oh Mari, Facebook's for old people. And in their mind, old is like 30 and up, right? Or 35 and up.
No, don't say
really
that.
Old people can grieve. So, but the real competition to Facebook, for all we know, might not even exist yet, but there could be an opening.
Well, you mentioned WeChat earlier, and you know, we've touched on it just briefly in a few other episodes. I think you're onto something. I mean, China obviously is a powerhouse in so many different ways. You know, their population is 4x the US. Mm-hmm. They obviously have different with the government sort of being involved in different ways than they are here. There's, you know, opportunities to unify things, and sort of they can grow much faster. It's going to be interesting to see what app, if it is WeChat, if it is a ByteDance product, kind of transcends the region of China and truly begins to penetrate globally. We just haven't experienced that yet, but I agree, if it's going to come from somewhere, it would likely come from China.
One aspect that we need to keep in mind here in North America is payments. And we haven't really touched on that, but payments is a major component of WeChat. And so that's an area that Facebook is really, really putting major focus on. You already have WhatsApp payments in certain countries like India, and then obviously segueing that into the cryptocurrency with Libra and where that's all going to unfold. Right now, honestly, it's anybody's guess, but knowing Facebook and the companies they've aligned with, it's going to go ahead, you know, and that'll be a major source of revenue between payments, slash the crypto. Eventually they might become one and the same, and shopping, right? So again, with Instagram, one of the biggest arenas for growth is shopping, real time in app, right? Not having to leave the app, filling up your cart. And eventually, actually, we can even see all of this working together holistically, where I've seen even a couple years ago, Facebook Live put out a test where you could put things into your cart and shop and pick your colors and sizes and numbers, check out, all the while the live is still playing picture in picture.
I think, you know, it goes back to that notion of being frictionless, and the more friction the platforms can remove to commerce, which is obviously anyone's goal who is out there trying to build a business, the easier it will be to generate revenue.
Yeah, we've seen that lately from Amazon, who did a really good job of that with their launch of their live product, right? And I don't know if you saw on Prime Day, but Lady Gaga's there pitching cosmetic, and you can do exactly that shopping process and check out while you're still watching how to actually use the product, which is very cool. I think from a platform and technology, especially when you see Amazon, who not natively a social platform, but definitely with the commerce piece, has added video, has added the ability for interaction, and now has that layer, like we're talking about, that Facebook's also moving closer to. So really interesting to see kind of who comes out ahead on that stack.
I love that you brought that up, Tuck, because I thought, oh my gosh, Lady Gaga, of all the brands out there, there are vehicles that she could have chosen to partner with, right? She went all in with Amazon with her makeup brand.
Yeah, it seems a little incongruous, but yet it worked really well, at least from from what everybody's kind of saying. So more broadly in social media, you've done some work with a group called Heart Math. Would you like to talk to us about your thoughts on how to raise consciousness of the planet through social media, and how maybe all of us can use social media more mindfully to create deeper relationships?
Oh, I just love this topic. Yes, yes. So actually, I just spent 5 days at a Transformational Leadership Council meeting, which is at Jack Canfield's Mastermind. It's where I first met the CEO of HeartMath. And one of our speakers in this last 5 days was a gentleman called David Hoole, and he's a futurist. And he was really talking a lot about how we're using social media, and that we have this opportunity as kind of like citizens of the internet to be more mindful, to be more conscious. And that's what I love about working with HeartMath and the work that they do is they call it heart coherence, where you're doing these deep heart-centered breaths that puts your brain more into an alpha and a beta state. You're just more relaxed. It's like a relaxed focus. It reduces stress. It helps you to just function better. You can do this anytime before you get on stage, before you get on a plane. and then they have devices like their M-Wave, or their inner balance device. It's all connected through an app. And so I feel that what we can focus on as leaders and businesses of all sizes, individual entrepreneurs right on up to, you know, Fortune 100 brands, to really be leading by example of how we want to utilize social platforms as a medium through which we can create a more conscious and mindful existence on the planet. One of the conversations this past few days was this wonderful local gentleman here in San Diego, Daniel Schmachtenberger. He's also a futurist and fascinating man. And he's talking about Twitter's founders, and they're thinking, oh my gosh, we were just hoping to create this fun little communication platform. Who knew it would be used for the president, you know, using it for all kinds of crazy things that he's doing. And so if we get back to the point of businesses and marketers, it's not the platform. It's, don't get mad at Twitter. Don't get mad at Facebook. It's how humans are using it. And so do your best to really use these platforms as to lead by example is really what I want to say.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It actually pulls us into a quick tangent that I was curious on your thoughts on. I saw a report actually this week that eMarketer is predicting $6 billion to be spent this election season on advertising, most of which is going into digital channels, most of which we know likely going into social media. And so really just a massive shift in terms of how people are viewing digital platforms, especially social media during election cycle. Potentially a hot topic considering what, you know, we kind of see the evidence to be showing from last time around. What do you think is the position of social media during this election cycle and how it's going to impact, what we see happening this time around?
Well, I mean, we have to be so careful of what's called deep fakes, right? I don't know if you've ever talked about that much, but the deep fake is just, it's scary what's even conceivable out there. And people are so quick, the masses, as I call them, right? So the massive number of users out there where they see something and, oh yeah, that looks like Jeff Bezos talking. That looks like Mark Zuckerberg talking. Oh, what's he saying? I'll just, you know, hit share on this. And before you know it, something's gone viral. But it's like so vital for every single one of us, citizens and residents of this planet, to do our own due diligence and check for legitimacy of what we're seeing, what we're sharing. Well, fortunately, if there's one upside that's come out of Facebook's privacy scandals and working with the government and whatnot and congressional testimonies and whatnot, is that they have put in place in the last year or so much more transparent advertising tools, and certainly when it comes to political advertising. But at the same time, it's almost, you kind of have to see who's going to outsmart who, because as tight as Facebook makes all of their conditions and their controls and filters and whatnot, you're still going to get the bad actors. They're going to do their best to come in and try to game the system and try to influence. And so I don't know. It's really at this moment in time, and I see what you're talking about there, talk of $6 billion for 2020 election. It's just extraordinary, like of how much of that will be spent on digital advertising. And I would just implore everybody listening to just make sure that you are being mindful about where you're putting your energy, even what you like, what you comment on, what you share, you know, just making sure that that's really is legitimate. It's what you want to put your name behind. Into digital.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I didn't mean to whiplash us from a happy, you know, heart math topic into that one, but it is very relevant. And yes. I think both speak to the power of social media and, to your point, the platform agnostically, what it's able to create, whether, you know, challenges like we're talking about, or on the positive side, the connection of relationships is, I think is why it operates so differently than any other of the digital platforms that we speak to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. It's complex.
It is. It is complex. Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I don't know. It's like, I just feel like back in the day, I was thinking about this where I got so excited, probably about 10 years ago. I was like, oh my gosh, social media is calling humanity to a higher level of truth and integrity and trust. And, you know, and then I was like, oh, wait a minute. I didn't predict the dark side. So much divisiveness and...
I hear you. It's funny that you said that, because I remember thinking, I mean, again, and this probably was, I don't know, 10 years ago, I guess, 09-ish. I remember thinking, I wonder what Facebook will do with all this data. I remember thinking, I think I was at Adidas at that point. And we were just, again, all playing around with it. No one really knew what we were doing. And we were sort of just I was realizing the amount of people that were coming on, you know, day after day, month after month, the amount of information, photos, although back then probably not even photos yet, were being shared. And I remember, again, the sort of the altruistic, I guess, the optimist in me was thinking, maybe they're going to do some sort of fantastic, like, anthropological research. They're going to publish, like, an amazing library of books or articles about, you know, like a time capsule of humanity in the early 2000s. It's going to be beautiful. And it never occurred to me it would get turned into a huge advertising platform and a political, you know, sort of platform. And so it's truly what people do with it, not so much the platform itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very interesting.
We might reach a tipping point at some time. Like I say, this group of leaders I just was with, it's like so many of us are in agreement about, oh my gosh, why didn't Zuckerberg see that he had this opportunity to help to create, it was literally, that's part of his mission, is to solve world problems. Where right now it feels like he's creating some of them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's a really interesting time we're living in, for sure. Okay, so I'm going to lighten it up a little bit, and we're going to do our lightning round of the last three questions. Again, you've got such great wisdom, such great experience. I want to just give a few more shout outs to some places where people can learn more. So let's start with question number one, which is, which book are you reading right now and or a book that you'd highly recommend to, again, business owners trying to learn more about digital and social?
Oh gosh. Okay. Well, excuse me. As I look around my desk, I'm like a book hoarder. I always like to get so many books, but one that's really capturing my attention right now is called The War of Art. It's been out for a while. Stephen Pressfield, about overcoming resistance to your creative work. Now, it's nothing to do with digital marketing, but for some people it might be. You want to get your podcast launched. You want to get that article out there. You want to start a whole new business, whatever it is. And you're just going to bump up against so many internal barriers or even external, but I'm actually in a mastermind just now, a gentleman called Bo Eason, and this is one of our assigned reading books, and I just love it. But in terms of learning digital marketing through a book, oh gosh, you know, that one's tricky. I think that it's because it's changing so much, I would probably recommend going more to websites and podcasts.
Yeah. Is there a podcast other than Social Currency?
I was going to say, I heard there's a great one called Social Currency.
thank you. But no, I'm sure there are many others that you enjoy listening to or even maybe have been interviewed on. Anything else that you'd recommend?
Yeah, absolutely. I do love Buffer's podcast, The Science of Social. Social Media Examiner has Mike Stelzner has a couple of different ones out. And I do, in terms of emails, I like, I actually subscribe to theinformation.com and I also really like inside.com. I love these hand curated when they basically are finding all the information for you and putting it into a daily email.
Yeah. What was the last one?
Inside.com. And you can get like, there's Inside Social, there's Inside Crypto, there's Inside everything. They have all these topics.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, awesome. Okay, question number two. Well, actually, you've sort of answered this in terms of how you stay up to date. You mentioned things change so rapidly. And so, frankly, a book becomes out of date almost instantly. So those are some podcasts and some email newsletters that you sign up for. But anything else that you do just to stay on top of trends, whether it's about Facebook and their family of apps or even, again, some of the Chinese platforms, any other sources that you like?
Yeah. Actually, one other podcast, fairly new one, it's called AI Marketing, just launched, like my good friend Mark Fidelman. He's right here in San Diego as well. So AI Marketing. And what else? Just a number. I have my Flipboard, you know, and I have my different lists on Twitter and on Facebook. And I follow people like Matt Navarra. I used to work for The Next Web, and I think I swear he never sleeps. He's over in the UK. He's 8 hours ahead of me, so he seems to know a lot about what's going on. So, a variety of different individuals and blogs and emails and podcasts, and I think people just have to kind of curate their own list of what they're interested in, because there's certain things I don't care about a brand new feature that's just fairly minor, but I do care about how does it impact a business? Like I'm always known like as the voice of reason, where they come to my Facebook page and go, okay, what does Mari say about this? Have you heard this? Should we be worried about it? Should we be changing and pivoting, or is it not even relevant to us? So I like to interpret the news for people.
Well, and we need those interpreters because there is such an onslaught of news, so much content. We're all overwhelmed almost every day.
Yeah, truly.
So it helps to have people like you who can filter through it, curate it, and kind of let us know, you know, what do we really need to care about? What should rise to the top? Okay, last question. A piece of advice that you would give leaders who may be listening, who perhaps didn't grow up a digital native, but maybe have that as part of their responsibility, or even just want to understand at a high level more about this space, knowing how important it is. What's a piece of advice for them?
Well, you know, we kind of touched on it earlier. And what I'm going to say here, Jess, is that you absolutely need to have a budget for paid social. But the difference, the real clincher here is don't even bother spending a penny on social ads until you have the right assets in place. So that is really doing your testing. You know the exact target audience. You've got your pixel installed. You have the right offer, a custom branded landing page. It's completely congruent with the ad. And then a good call to action. And I get all the time people say, oh, Mari, does Facebook work for B2B? And I'm like, absolutely. I see great white papers and major corporations with B2B services are advertising across all the platforms and doing really well. So paid budget, but only with the right assets in place.
Yeah, super smart. Target your audience and use your money wisely.
Awesome.
Yeah, amen.
Well, Mari, you have so many awesome things that you're doing and new things in the pipeline, I'm sure. Would you like to share with the audience anything that you're looking forward to in the next few months and where they can find you?
Thank you. I appreciate that. So I'm definitely looking forward to a new influencer training program I'm working on. I'm working with a publisher on a new book. I eventually will definitely launch my own podcast and an online TV show, a digital TV show, and quite possibly a mainstream TV show. So a lot of things in the pipeline right now. They're not quite ready to be fully aired, but just so much that's in development. I'm really excited about. And people can find me. Facebook's Mari Smith, Twitter's Mari Smith, Instagram's Mari_Smith, and MariSmith.com. We'll be launching a new website in the next couple months. So
wow. You've got tons of stuff in the hopper.
So much going on.
Yeah, hiring new people. Wow. It's all good.
Oh, that's awesome. Very cool. Thank you so much, Mari. This was such a wealth of information, a great conversation.
Oh, I was delighted to do it for you guys, and I really appreciate you. Can't wait to tell my people about it.
All right, and that's Social Currency. As a reminder, Social Currency is a marketing podcast covering the hottest digital and social media marketing topics that matter for your business strategy now, including Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, and all the things we just covered with Mari Smith. I'm your host, Tuck Ross. You can find me at Tuck Ross, and with me is Jessica Jensen. You can find her at Jessica K. Jensen on all of your favorite social platforms, including Facebook and Instagram. Go to socialcurrencyshow.com and subscribe anywhere you get your podcast, like Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. And if you love it, we'd love if you'd leave us a 5-star review on one of those platforms, especially Apple Podcasts, because it helps others like you find their social currency. We really appreciate you guys listening. Jess, so good to chat with you again and look forward to our next time around.
Yay!
All right, Mari. Well, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate you being here today and sharing so much time with us and giving us your thoughts on Facebook and everything else going on with you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.